This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, you know, I've seen you wear a lot of different outfits here when we record, and unfortunately the viewers can't see this because we don't put the show out in video, but I've never seen you wear a top quite as low-cut as the one you're wearing today.
Well, Chris, you know, you gotta make money how you can make money, and Quark was the only one who hired me, and this was the outfit I had to wear. A really low V. It's really popular with the hipsters these days, but I don't know. It sells drinks at Quark's, so that's what I'm wearing.
Well, it just reminds me, you know, the episode we're going to talk about today, as we do a commentary, Dr. Bashir, I presume, it's like the opening scene is like straight in on Chase Masterson's cleavage.
You know, it almost feels like the episode might be named Lita's Assets, I presume, because they're in this
right?
This show a lot. I mean, the side story is supposed to be in this episode, Rom and Lita's love story, but I really think it's just her boobs.
I think so. And Zimmerman really picks up on that right away, doesn't he?
Well, you know, as we know, apparently the Doctor and Zimmerman are quite the same since he modeled himself after it. And wow, he does like the ladies. So we can understand why the Doctor fell in love with Seven.
Definitely, yes. Now I'm picturing Seven as a Dabo girl.
Oh, goodness. We should probably just start this real quick.
I guess we should. So yeah, this week we're going to do a commentary again, and we're going to talk about Dr. Bashir, I presume, and you know the changes to Bashir's character and how this all plays out, because it's a nice mix of comedic elements in here as well as some very serious story elements that touch on various points of contention, I guess I would say, within the Star Trek universe. So if you want to queue up your episode, queue up Netflix, your DVD player, however it is that you watch Deep Space Nine.
Not your Blu-ray player, because it's not on Blu-ray yet.
Not your Blu-ray player yet. Hopefully, like within 2 years anyway. I hope within a year, Matthew. Well, this is season 5, DS9, so maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll be able to watch this episode in HD remastered. But for now, if you want to get your playback ready, we'll give you a countdown to start the episode in 3, 2, 1, play.
Oh, there they are.
There's the shot.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. It is very funny to me. I was watching this episode today, Chris, and I was thinking to myself, you know, this is such a serious episode. What they're dealing with, this whole idea of genetic engineering with Bashir, and you know, we know its connection with Khan, and you know, genetic engineering bad. But the whole episode to start off this way with, you know, Rom being in love with Lita, and he's trying to, you know, figure out how to tell her, and this whole conversation he has with Quark here. It's just such an interesting way to open the episode, and it sets that nice juxtaposition of the B story line that's going to be going on with the A storyline and giving you those light moments.
Well, now, of course, you know, originally the whole Bashir-Zimmerman storyline was the B story in the original draft of this episode. And then they pulled it up and they they made it the A story, thank goodness, because I think that it does need to be the A story.
Well, yeah, I think so too. You can't change fundamentally a character without it being the main storyline, especially right. one as major as Bashir.
I like Rom's reaction when he's finally face to face with Lita. He can't say anything. What I do like too about this whole setup here, even though the primary point of the episode is about Bashir, is it is once again that way that Deep Space Nine works its continuity in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even in episodes where you wouldn't expect it, they are carrying these different storylines of the characters forward.
I love how she goes, "Sure you do, honey. That's what I hired you for. So eat up and then take those brains back over to the Dabo wheel where the customers can get a nice long look at them." Talk of how I just the idea that kind of sexism is like okay in the 24th century is quite interesting to me still. So,
well, it is the point that even though maybe on Earth we move beyond that and it's not the norm, it is mm-hmm. kind of like human or humanoid nature, yeah. whatever you want to say, like it's going to exist somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I have to say, Chris, I wanted this dartboard. This is the coolest dartboard. The fact that it like keeps score for you and everything, but it's a real dartboard they're playing with. It just, man, this is a great dartboard. I really would love to have it. And I love the interaction here about, you know, Bashir talking about he's not really a family man. He's not really the family type. And then, of course, oh, wait, it's the doctor from Voyager. What's he doing here? He's in the wrong uniform, too.
Yeah. You know, this is it's the first time that we see Zimmerman as a real person on Star Trek, because we see him mm-hmm. on Voyager in Projections, which yes. is a great episode, and The Swarm, but he's a hologram in both of those cases. And so this is the first time that we actually get to see the real live Zimmerman in the flesh. And then he does come back one more time on Voyager.
Yeah.
In Lifeline.
You know what's so interesting too is that how come DS9 can do Voyager continuity better than Voyager can? There's a ton of Voyager references in here that yeah. Voyager itself would never pick up on. So apparently the Deep Space Nine writers are watching Voyager and keeping continuity for this episode, but the Voyager writers aren't.
Right. Well, I heard that Chase Masterson said there's a retake. There was a scene in here where Robert Picardo is, I guess he's boarding the shuttle at the end, something like that. And he says, "By the way, have you seen my work on Star Trek Voyager?" He just changed the line on the fly, you know?
Yeah, I like that his line at the end is, "Have you heard of the Earth book, the Kama Sutra?" I was like, who starts a conversation like that?
Oh, that's the line. Yeah, I think that's the line, maybe. Have you heard of my work on Star Trek Voyager? Yeah.
Goodness.
But yeah, who starts a conversation like that, right?
No one that, unless you want to get slapped. I mean, apparently she's not familiar with it because she didn't immediately slap him.
That's right, yeah.
So,
I think that the Bajoran Kama Sutra was a book written by the Pah Wraiths. And so it has been banned. It has been locked away somewhere.
Possibly. It's one of their banned books. It's in the fire caves.
That's right.
You know, Chris, I was going to, is watching this episode, obviously, and as we get back here after the credits, just this idea that this is something that doesn't get followed up on. And I was a little disappointed that we never, ever hear about the LMH again. And, you know, I mean, obviously, it's one of those things that he even says in the scene, it's going to take a while for him to figure out because he's got some problems to figure out. But I was hoping it was going to be something we'd find out later. Like, even, wouldn't it be great, you know, Voyager, DS9 ended and Voyager was still going on. What if when they had lifelines, Bashir showed up as an LMH in that episode? That would have been perfect, I thought. So,
well, it seems like a no-brainer that Starfleet would eventually develop an LMH, because we don't get to see the EMH in action on other starships. We get to see it on the Enterprise E briefly
as a joke
in First Contact, as a joke, right? But the implication is, of course,
well, and Beverly's a good doctor. She hates the EMH, so.
Right, right. But the implication is, of course, that this is something that they are installing on all new starships. And once they see the benefit of it, it seems like a natural evolution for me that they would develop a long-term medical hologram that would be on every starship in the future. So you would expect this would be followed up on, right?
I love Sisko in this scene because he's like, who is the template for the original EMH? And he says, me. And he just kind of gives that head nod like, oh, you really?
I know.
It's just awesome.
The look on Sisko's face the whole time, he's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly. I think he's thinking to himself, man, if I ever have to have an LMH, EMH kind of thing, I think I'd want Bashir more than this guy.
Right.
You know, what was really interesting, too, in this episode was just, you know, for Bashir, this is his family. You know, he said he's not really a family man to Miles. But I think to him, this has really become his family. And as you can see in this scene here, where him and Miles are going back and forth with this banter, you know, they're like brothers, you know, he may not, you know, have a family that he's really close to biologically, but he's created one here. And I think in the end, you know, all of Star Trek is really about that, is these kind of like found families that a starship becomes, you know, or a star base.
Oh, exactly.
So, it's really cool to see that play out here as opposed to him.
I love this line right here. If this works, you can irritate hundreds of people you've never met.
Yes, I know. Oh, man.
And that's the brotherly thing, right? That you're, I mean, we talk about, you know, the bromance and all, but they are a lot like brothers. And that is the perfect kind of family jab right there of Miles to Jules.
Yeah. It's,
there's another shot, and Morn runs. I love that Morn runs up. Yep. Here's my chance.
Yeah, he gives her the big hug, and she pushes him away. Yeah. Very funny. You know what's really interesting about this episode as well is just the way you can contrast how Bashir has mellowed. You know, so when he's doing the whole scene where he's interviewing people and they're talking about him when he first came and then who he is now, it is a very different character. You know, Bashir has grown so much in the series. You know, there are still parts of him that have that kind of too much information or the go-getter, but at the same time he's a much more relaxed and confident character. I liked this episode just because it really rocks the foundation of who he is and kind of gets to the bottom of it finally. And Deep Space Nine does that periodically throughout the seasons with its characters, really giving us a background of kind of really then unraveling, okay, who is this character in the past, so that informs who they are now. And I liked that we finally got that about him. So,
you know, talking about how his character grows and, of course, how Alexander Siddig plays the character over the course of 4+ seasons to get to this, when you watch this episode, do you see it in the performance where Alexander Siddig was really pissed about this episode when he got the script? There's an interview on Ugo that Jordan Hoffman did with Alexander Siddig, and they're talking about this, and he said that he got the script on Thursday to start shooting on Friday, and on Tuesday he didn't know anything about the change to his character, and then he got the script the day before and he found out that his character was genetically enhanced, and he was actually really pissed about it because he's thinking about what he would have done differently if he had known this all along. And it was a drastic change to the character. And they talk about how he didn't even bother to learn the lines because he was so irritated. Do you see any of that irritation come through in the performance?
You know, I was thinking while I was watching this, I was thinking he was giving a great performance and maybe he should have done it more often if that's the case.
Well, I wonder if the irritation, because I kind of feel it a bit, but it's something that I think maybe helped the performance.
Right, because, exactly.
I mean, if you were having to deal with Lewis Zimmerman, wouldn't you be a little bit irritated the whole time?
Yeah, well, and not only dealing with that, but the way he then gets to play with his parents and everything, and then the situation that happens, I feel like it works so well. And, you know, speaking about how he might have changed things in the past, honestly, I think when you look back, you can kind of retcon in your head thinking,
you can.
This guy has been pretending to be somebody else for his entire existence. He's been playing kind of the overeager fool. He's been pretending to be the people pleaser, what everybody wants. And this makes for a fascinating character, a lot of depth. And I really appreciate, you know, this idea of kind of getting to come out of the closet. I mean, and I don't mean that in a, you know, gay, lesbian way. I mean, just this idea that sometimes we all feel like we have something to hide and we don't really get to be ourselves. And we have to kind of just live our lives as according to what everybody else thinks we should be instead of just being who we are, whatever that is.
You know, what's interesting, I mean, the point that you make there is exactly the thing, because you can retcon it. And what I find interesting is that even Ronald D. Moore said, when asked about, you know, the potential continuity problems that this introduces, he himself said it really explained a lot about the character to me. Looking back at the different elements of the character over those first four seasons, that it explained a lot to him.
Kira. Sometimes he just didn't know when to shut up.
Yeah, Kira's awesome.
I love that that's our only scene in the episode is this. It's great.
But it's very Kira, right?
Well, and then this was great too. This whole scene with Dax where she's born. I love though that Dax, you can still tell that there's a part of her that really loves Julian, you know, in that scene, that she really does care for him. And then of course the scene with Miles is just fantastic, where he's just going on and on and on. You know, he's an extraordinary person. It's you can see the depth of how these guys feel about each other, the way that they've won each other over by their characters.
Well, and it also it fits into the relationship so well, because Miles says, are you sure he's not going to
Exactly.
It's like the stuff like, this is how I feel about him.
Right.
But I really don't want him to know.
Right. Well, and it won't come out until they're sitting in that you know, hallway thinking they're going to die. And he says, you love your wife, but you like me more.
Exactly.
Oh, goodness. I like Rom has this little like ear thing. He can move it and just gets in the right frequency there so he can hear the conversation there. And how
it pays
easy
to have big lobes.
Yeah, how easy is Lita that she would consider going off with this guy just because Rom hadn't said anything to her in, like, what, 3 days or whatever? Oh, goodness.
I know, Lita's like, someone says that you're pretty, and she's like, oh.
Yeah, like, she hasn't heard that her whole life, probably. I mean.
Yeah.
Lita's cleavage, I presume. It's really the... It's really the focus of the episode, so. Rom just comes in. I need to talk to you.
But Lita's excited. Like, this is the moment.
I know. I have to say, it's funny because Chase does a great job of portraying the fact that she's in love with this guy who looks like a toad.
Yeah. Yes, she does. Yeah.
I can't. There's the scene later on when they kiss each other. Can you imagine trying to kiss those poor guys with the teeth they have in as a Ferengi?
Oh gosh, yeah. What do they do? Practice with masks or something like that in the dressing room? They just have the mask. I could practice.
I guess. Goodness. Oh man. I like, he's like, can I come fix your replicator? Is that good for you tomorrow? This is the scene I like here with Sisko and Bashir, because you can kind of tell he's still being a little over eager in some places. You know, he's really thorough in what he does, but it's good. What did you think of Bashir's parents in the episode? Like, just the choice of you know, characters and obviously kind of having that Mediterranean and Arab feel to them, because we're not quite sure what his background is, you know, race wise. And so,
well, I don't know. I mean, it's apparently when you need someone of Pakistani slash Indian slash Middle Eastern mysterious descent in Hollywood, you have to cast Brian George. Apparently he's the only actor available because, you know, he played Babu on Seinfeld. He's Bashir's dad here. If I'm not mistaken, is he not Raj's dad on Big Bang Theory now as well?
Ah, yes, he is. Yeah.
So I have to say, this is one of those moments in Star Trek where it's a little bit tough for me because of the fact that he did play Babu on Seinfeld. And when you bring these characters in that I'm used to in a comedy and I see them, it takes me a little more effort to get into the story, I think.
I thought that they both did a great job of portraying his parents, and then the whole family dynamic and the way it played out in the script and then the way it was played here, I thought did a great job of explaining why Bashir is not close to his parents.
Yeah.
And it's not just the genetically enhanced bit, but it's this whole underlying current of he really became a different person, and then one that couldn't really respect his dad because he was smart enough to really figure out what his dad did or didn't do. You know, he wasn't going to buy the lies that his dad told, or not the lies, but the exaggerations that his dad told. You know, he could see through them at that point. And so there's something about being genetically enhanced that I think did kind of disrupt, especially the relationship he has with his father. So there was more than one unintended consequence that went along with that genetic enhancement that kind of ruined and soured that relationship.
Yeah. Once I get past what I mentioned in terms of just the actor and getting that, then I do agree with you. I think even in this scene here, I think he does do a good job of playing the father, mm-hmm. someone's father, you know, who's meeting their son's boss,
yes.
captain, you know, in this case, for the first time, and they're proud of their son. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree. I think he did a good job with the performance.
I love that Miles is making Julian walk into the wall on purpose, pretty much. He's like, we're working on a few yeah. bugs, but I just think he's making him do it on purpose. So. Now, this is the point.
Pretty sure that's what McCoy was doing with Spock and Spock's brain,
yes.
too. We didn't see it, but he just had him yes. walking into the side of the cave over and over.
This is the scene that, you know, I feel like Bashir had a point. You know, mm-hmm. Starfleet may have picked him to be this, but the kind of profile that he creates and who he gets to interview, it does seem very personal. And it's not completely necessary for that. And so I do feel like Zimmerman kind of crossed a line that he may have shouldn't have. But
well, he seems like the kind of person who would be on a bit of a power trip. And of course, we know that he doesn't want... Well, this is in the original ending of this episode was that O'Brien would find a flaw that Zimmerman had intentionally put in there because he didn't want the EMH to be replaced by the LMH. And so some of that still comes through to be that he would be the kind of guy
yes.
who's maybe he's not totally happy with the job that he's having
yeah.
to do here.
This is about to turn into many fanboys' favorite scene in Deep Space Nine as Chase Masterson will walk out of the room, not realizing that she's not wearing any clothes. Chase Masterson, I presume. I like how
not
she says
all.
Sorry. Yeah, like I don't think you need to apologize to a guy for that. You know,
that's right. No need to apologize.
This whole idea, though, that she would just kind of pop up and you know go with him, it's a little bit far-fetched. It's very like romantic comedy to me.
But I always pictured Jupiter Station as being, I mean, it's like this big facility for I never picture it having like a cafe where someone's got to come in and be the manager. It's like Wings. It's like there's an airport and then there's,
no,
there's
it's
the
like,
little
yeah.
bar.
Well, K7 had one. It wasn't that big, you know. At Jupiter Station, it's a pretty big place. It seems like all these stations have a place for people to recreate. I mean, even the Next Generation, was it Measure of a Man, the big, huge star base they're at there? It has a recreation and you know, restaurant
they do,
area.
Yeah.
So.
They would have it. It's just something that I've never, just with Jupiter Station, like I've never thought about that before. And so here's Zimmerman like, oh, there's, you know, there's an opening in the cafe. They need a new manager. Why don't you come with me?
Or like at Utopia Planitia, you don't really think about them having that kind of thing either, you know?
That's what I'm really thinking of, especially, Utopia Planitia, Well, I think like Cisco has a jazz bar there or something.
Yeah.
While he's designing the Defiant.
It's called Jake's.
It's like Wendy's. It's his son. Mm-hmm. His picture is on the sign. It's Jake's. Okay, so here we get into some good family scenes.
Yeah, this was a good scene because they don't tell you right away what's happened. You can just see the disdain that Bashir has for his father. What I thought was great is that they explain it later why he has such disdain. It's not just being able to see through his dad, but it's this whole issue of feeling like he was traded in for a better son, and that better son you created, not only does he not really love you as much, but he also can't love you as much because you fundamentally changed who he was so he could see through you.
And I think that's what Alexander Siddig had such a problem with in the sudden change to the character as well, is that the writers fundamentally changed the character of Bashir just on a last moment decision after 5 years of this character.
Yeah, I could see that as an actor being upset about that. At the same time, I feel like, you know, to me, if I had been him, I would have been like, okay, this is something new to play with. Like, you know, my character's been growing, and now I have a whole new toolbox to be able to play with. Like, I get to open a whole new toy box. To me, that would have been exciting so that the character wouldn't get dull after, after playing it for 5 years. It did open up a lot of great storylines for him.
Yeah. Well, it did. And I think that the change that he was able to get the writers to make to the ending helped, because originally the ending, this was going to remain a secret between Miles and Bashir and Zimmerman. And Alexander Siddig said, I don't want to have the secret that the character has that no one knows about, because it may have a detrimental impact on how I portray the character moving forward. So he got them to change the ending to where it comes out into the open. Everyone knows.
Right. Which then created the wonderful scene, of course, at the bar with them playing the darts at the end. And it creates all the other scenes where, you know, Bashir is able to then be free to be him, you know, really him. And it also, I think, explains in a lot of ways, like, okay, so he was in a relationship with somebody like Lita. This is why this doesn't work. He's a genius, you know, and he needs somebody who can really be on his level in a lot of different ways, you know. And I think that's one of the things that makes Miles and Julian such good friends. You know, Miles has all of the street wisdom, you know. He's a really smart guy. He's an engineer. He can think on the same levels as Bashir in a lot of ways, but just from a different point of view. Like, and the things that Bashir doesn't have and has to learn from him, they just kind of complement each other really well, and that's why they think they get along so well. Obviously, after
what do you think
he stops
about
annoying him.
We'll come back. I was going to ask you about the Ram Lita thing, but I'll come back to it. Because we have a scene here with the dad.
This is the only scene in the episode that doesn't work for me, and it's because it's so choreographed. Like, you automatically know this isn't Bashir. Even the first time I saw this episode, I was like, oh, no. And then his parents are just like, like verbally vomiting all this stuff. It's like, they wouldn't do that.
Like, for us as the viewer, just the way that Alexander Siddig is holding his head, just the way he's looking, that kind of blank stare.
Right.
As the parents, you would have to immediately pick up on that, right?
I don't get it. But the fact that they just kind of literally just verbal vomit all the words that you wouldn't say, you would just be like, you know, we were not going to talk about your secret. So we just wanted to let you know we're sorry. We're taking this very seriously. You know, you wouldn't talk about how you don't believe genetic and engineering is like terrible and all these things. Like, it's just not something you would do in public, even if you are in a room where you think you're alone with your son.
And his mom just kisses a hologram of her son and doesn't even notice that it's not him.
Yeah, it's just the only scene that doesn't work, and they need it for the reveal. But it would have been better if they had been a little bit more cryptic.
Yeah.
So that, you know, Zimmerman has to dig and find something out. I think that would have been a little bit better, a little bit cleaner, because his parents wouldn't have come off so stupid. I love this scene, though, and mainly love this scene because of the way that Miles reacts and the fact that he doesn't react. He just sits there calmly asking his friend questions, letting him vent, tell him the story, listening, being supportive. I mean, everything that you'd want in a friend at a time like this, you know, Miles does.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just really doing a great job. You know, we talked about earlier this being a Bashir episode, but really, I think in a lot of ways, this is a Bashir-Miles episode. Because it does so much for their friendship, really kind of cementing the fact that these guys are, as we call these days, besties.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It is a Bashir Miles episode.
The bromance continues.
Unnatural.
This is the scene, too, I think, that I was... I really like the way Siddig plays it. He's just... He's completely defeated. It's, you know, like his secrets come out. Everything is about to collapse. And he just plays it so well.
Well, this is also where I feel some of the frustration that he had over the change to the character. He's like, yeah, my character is unnatural. It's been changed. I'm not who you thought I was.
Yeah. Whether or not that's the case, I think it does well and wonders for the scene, because it feels very natural, as if just something you know, if this was you might say these very words in the same way. And coming off with the whole idea of being a disappointment to his parents.
Yeah. Well, like here, you know, you were talking about how Miles doesn't react. And even though Julian is talking to Miles and telling him a story, this is really just Julian talking to himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just working through this and just talking to the air. Miles happens to be sitting over there.
Well, and I, in some ways, I think it's kind of a therapy to finally be able to let this out to somebody. You know, so he's telling the story and he's getting to recount what it was like for him to somebody who isn't his parents. And talking about how he changed and just the crazy nature of what that was like for him. I can't imagine the idea of jumping, you know, 5 IQ points per day for over 2 weeks. I'd be really smart.
I also think it's very Deep Space Nine, but it's kind of a brave thing by the writers to go back to this issue of eugenics and genetic mm-hmm. enhancement mm-hmm. and actually make it not only part of the series and part of an episode, but to actually make the person who is enhanced one of our main cast members who is a Starfleet officer, because mm-hmm. it's just been something that because of the Khan and the eugenics wars, they've just kind of shied away. And, you know, the Federation has this policy of like no genetic enhancements. But again, I mean, we're already genetically enhancing ourselves today. And I know in Star Trek, that's what happened. There were genetic enhancements and it led to the eugenics wars and then they ban everything. But I just think in reality, that is the progression. That's where we're headed. I think it's important to talk about it in the series.
Well, and they even, you know, they kind of touch on how genetics is used. You know, it's only used mm-hmm. in severe birth defects. Mm-hmm. And even then it seems like very lightly. They tread on you know, thin yeah. ice at that point when it comes to genetics. So just bringing that all to the forefront here and having that play out in the Star Trek universe, and it is really interesting. And I like what Miles says, because yeah, this idea that, you know, but they haven't dealt with this in over 100 years. There probably hasn't been a case like this. Who knows how they react? So the idea that, you know, our thought process does change over time, and yeah. after say like 100 years, you know, maybe there's a part of genetic manipulation or research or whatnot that isn't as looked down upon as it used to be, maybe.
Right. Well, that's why I think it's important here that they're talking about this, more important now as we watch it than it was at the time that it aired. Yeah. And 10 years from now, it'll be even more important. What I wanted to ask you earlier about the Leader Rom thing, they cut back to this Leader Rom storyline more often than I think maybe... Maybe I feel like they shouldn't cut back to it as often as they do, because it is largely a comedic element within the episode. But at the same time, it does show the same situation that Bashir is in, which is a frustration with those you love. Because obviously, Rom's in love with Leeta. Leeta's in love with Rom. They can't really talk to each other, though. And of course, Bashir loves his parents, and his parents love him, even though they have this friction between them. So do you feel like these two storylines complement each other?
Yeah, I think they do. And I think it was one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine that they had enough side characters that they were really invested in, that they were going to say, hey, you know what? Two of these characters, we're actually going to get together. You know, we're going to create a relationship mm-hmm. for them on the side. They might not be main characters, but they're still important enough for us to work with.
And you can use that to play off of another storyline mm-hmm. and right. even add some comedic right. value.
Well, yeah. and it does connect to the other main storyline with Zimmerman and everything like that. So they do a good enough job, I think, and do it really well. Apparently, mm-hmm. Vulcan Love Slave 2 has just come out for Quark, and he's very excited about it. So
definitely.
I think this was the other scene that was really, when it comes to the family scenes, this was the one that I felt like Siddig just really knocked out of the park with his acting. He plays that idea of being hurt and wounded and kind of carrying around this open wound for the longest time, and especially with his parents, and trying to just, now he gets everything out in the open. And then, of course, the way his mother just talks to him and explains to him why they did what they did. And it had nothing to do with they didn't love him and all those kind of things is really, it's just kind of a heartbreaking thing. The struggle of the parents and the struggle of the child, you can understand them both and how much they would hurt on both sides.
Yeah, I agree. I'll also say here, you know, earlier on I did mention about Brian George, you know, being on Seinfeld and playing comedic role and all, but I think this scene does show that, and even though he gets used, maybe overused, in casting sometimes various shows, I think it shows the range of his acting, because I think he does a good job here of playing a very serious role, playing a father and conveying that side of this relationship that you're talking about here, which is completely different than what you see him do and in a lot of other roles.
Yeah. Well, and this whole idea of you know, now you're my architect, you aren't really my father, mm-hmm. you just designed a better son. You know, who as a child and in probably some ways hasn't felt a little bit like maybe their parents were disappointed in who they were, and then you may have felt like they, you know, like, I don't know if you ever felt like that, but the idea that your parents, you know, maybe you had a better friend and they kind of had a better relationship with your friend than they did with you. And lots of people have gone through that kind of idea that maybe they felt like their parents weren't really as happy with them as they wanted them to be. And that's a really painful thing to grow up with. So the fact that this design just kind of touching on that as well, this is a mm-hmm. big psychological family issue to kind of tackle in a TV show. And really
but his mother really conveys the flip side. Yeah. Like you said earlier, how she explains why they did it. I mean, that's the thing as a parent here. It's really hard. I mean, for me as a parent, it's really hard to find fault in what Bashir's parents did, because I can totally understand their reasoning, can totally understand why they would do it. And it had to be a very, very difficult decision for them as well. And although Bashir feels a lot of pain from it, and I mean anguish, not so much physical pain, but just through his life, you know, it weighs on his parents as well at the time they made the decision and all the way through until now. And that's where they just have never been able to open up to each other as they're doing here.
Yeah. Well, I think this is one of those episodes that really shows, you know, how Deep Space Nine approach to Star Trek was that the final frontier was the human condition.
Yeah.
It was what are we going to be? What is it going to be like to live in this universe in this 24th century with these ideals we have and everything else? And I think that's what makes it so special and so good and so relevant, as you were talking about how this episode was important then. It's even more important now. And as you watch it in the future, it may be even more important with where we're going, because it's dealing with real human issues that are transcendent, like what we were talking about, the idea of how Bashir feels about with his parents and how this transcends, you know, even we can put ourselves in those shoes. We're not genetically enhanced, but we may have felt like our parents don't love us or want us, or we're not good enough for them. So, I mean, just fantastic writing and really exploring that what it means to be human.
Definitely. Here's the dreaded holographic communicator again. It's thankfully the last time we see this on Deep Space Nine.
You know, I didn't hate it. I just thought it was a good idea. It just doesn't really, I mean, it doesn't work with the iconography of Star Trek.
Yeah, it doesn't work on television. Like in real life, maybe it would be a great idea, but it just looks like an actor standing in the room with them. It just doesn't quite.
Yeah. Quite well, work. And you know, if you ask me, Cisco's office needed a much bigger wall display in the first place. So, because he only had that small, tiny little wall display, or is the one on his desk.
Yeah.
It was kind of always crazy to me that he has no larger display in his office. He's the captain of the station.
Well, it's because it was Dukat's office, and Dukat didn't want people, you know, seeing what he was doing in there all the time.
I guess, but
You know,
I feel like he'd be wanting to watch Netflix more often.
Right. Speaking though, you mentioned that Deep Space Nine took it the final frontier as a human condition, and the way they're talking about the characters, you know, so many people point out like one of their favorite episodes of The Next Generation is Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. Because Lower Decks deals with what's going on underneath the surface.
Yep.
The surface is the exploration, the strange new world, the diplomatic missions. We don't really see what's going on under the surface so much.
Mm-hmm.
But in Lower Decks, we do. We see like these just ordinary crew members and what's happening. And it's interesting to me that people point out that that's one of their favorite TNG episodes, because it does a lot of what we get to see here all the time.
Yep.
Which is exploring the human condition. What's life really like for our characters?
I do like to the way that, and I'm glad that they made, you know, that Siddig made them change this ending, because yes. it does as well. It brings the family back together in a way that hasn't happened before. I think that's a really important thing to have it happen in the show, and it makes for, you know, Deep Space Nine gets trounced on for being so dark and gritty or whatever, but the fact that I think they end the show like this creates a much more memorable experience, and it is nice to have the more happy ending.
Well, it lifted the weight. I mean, what was weighing down on the three of them has been removed now, so they can actually start to heal.
Well, and you'll notice that the character, I think, of Bashir becomes much more free as they open him up, and then it does create a difference between who he was before the secret's out and now. So,
yeah, gosh, Rom, you can hear me coming from a mile away.
Oh yeah, no kidding. You know, I don't think that Lita owns any dress that doesn't come below a certain line. Like, it's like she's in the store and she's like, oh, nope, not low enough.
Right. You know, Garrick tailors a dress for her, and he says, how does this look? And she says, if you can lower that line about 10 inches, then we'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. This, you know what's really funny is this alien that Zimmerman meets reminds me of an alien that he would have run into in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just some generic, like, random alien in tight leather, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
One who's obviously interested in the Kama Sutra.
Yeah, definitely. That's the part where he says, excuse me, are you familiar with my work on Star Trek Voyager?
Yeah. That's funny. I love this scene where Miles finally puts together that, you know, Bashir could have been kicking his butt all these years at darts. You stand over here, I'll stand here, and if that doesn't work, we get a blindfold. Oh, such a good
scene. It'd have to be frustrating if you have to intentionally throw the darts to the outside of the board.
Oh, yeah.
No, just to not give it away that you're genetically enhanced.
Well, and it makes you think of all those things, you know, for Bashir. Is he not valedictorian on purpose in his class? Is, you know, is he so overeager? All these things, you know, does he kind of pursue, you know, Gen Zia kind of in such a flamboyant way? Just because he's playing a persona instead of really being who he is, which, you know, I think it made sense to me later in season 7 when Ezri and him end up together in the end, because he's finally who he is, and she's in a place where, you know, all that works back together.
I think that if he were himself as we come to know him at the beginning in Emissary, Jadzia may have been interested in.
Yeah, I think so too.
So. All right. Well, there is the episode going into the credits here. Any final thoughts on the episode, Matthew?
And Chris, you know, we were talking about the idea that Siddig doesn't like this episode, and or didn't, at least when he first got it, he was upset. It's funny because for me, I've always loved this episode, and I think it does wonders for the character of Bashir and makes him even more interesting. And I like him even more than I did before after this episode. And so I'm always glad that they gave this new wrinkle to his character. And I think it was a good choice for the writers.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say when he was in the airlock with his parents, and you talked about how you know, the moment it gave for the characters and all. I was thinking that this is a moment where, especially in the fifth season of a show, where sometimes the actor knows their character better than the writers.
Yeah.
Because this is a place where, thank goodness, Alexander Siddig stood up and said, this ending doesn't work. Think about the repercussions of this ending. Mm-hmm. We need to change it to be like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a case where Siddig knew who Bashir was mm-hmm. better than the, as great as the writers were, he knew who Bashir was better than the writers did. And thankfully, they listened to him and they made this change, which did give this episode the final push that it needed to be a great episode.
Definitely.
All right. Well, this is a fun one, and I hope everyone enjoyed the commentary, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Rewriting TOS Season 1 with Mark Cushman.
This is a show that was an excellent show. Let's face it. It was, I think, one of the best shows ever made. Certainly the best show at that time. I think the best written show. Because Gene Roddenberry was so determined that every episode would have a strong theme and make a statement.
Earl Grey.
TNG Season 8.
Or no, this is it. The Traveler is a Q, and so the Traveler shows up with Wesley. Q shows up and's like, Q? What are you doing here?
I go by T now.
The Orb.
Sisko is Captain versus Commander.
I mean, with the war and everything going on, there's a part of him that's really hardened. But at the same time, when it comes to the people that are around him, whether it's Cassidy, which, you know, the idea that he would forgive Cassidy, I wouldn't see him doing that in the first few seasons.
The Ready Room.
But the ending of the episode is Data flashing a flashlight, and I think that's kind of a lame ending. I just wanted to bring
you. You wanted to say the end of the episode was Data flashing people on the bridge.
I know. That's also part of Daniel's fanfic number 58.
To the journey!
The 37's commentary.
I had a dream the other day where I met Robert Beltran in a Macy's. And I, like, totally geek out on him, but I try to say, like, oh, no, I totally have also know you from your Hispanic and Native American plays. And, like, I was trying to, like, BS my way through saying I only know you from Star Trek Voyager.
Did it work?
I woke up. Warp 5.
Farmer on Enterprise.
It's not just losing control of yourself, it's the fact that, that zombies, even zombie Vulcans, cannot be reasoned with.
Some would say that normal Vulcans can't be reasoned with, Kate.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Harlan Ellison recap.
Well, I also think it's entirely possible that Harlan Ellison has encountered a lot of people ripping off his stuff because he's actually a prophet. And he just saw the future and thought, that's a good idea for an Outer Limits episode.
Literary Treks.
Q and Trelane Comics.
Kirk is actually doing the hands thing that he does, you know, where he's trying to make a point with his hands.
Yeah, that's right.
He's actually doing it in the comic. It's fantastic. It feels just like Kirk.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows, and you can find them in a lot of different places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download and stream from the website. And you'll find links to everything over at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Matthew, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Dr. Bashir, I presume, or the character Bashir, or anything else they want to talk about with Deep Space Nine. You can go to trek.fm/contact, and there's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me both by email. You can send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about the show, about DS9, anything about Star Trek you want to talk about. There are lots of categories over there. Also on social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, and you'll find us on Twitter, where we tweet away all the time about Star Trek under username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not over at your tailor trying to get a shirt that's even lower cut than the last, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing Literary Treks with you, where we talk about books and comics in the Star Trek universe. I've got my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And Chris, you know, when you're not hanging out with Zimmerman trying to come up with brand new creative Lita holograms, where can we find you?
It's a fine pastime, I have to admit.
That's true.
You can find me you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com, where, Matthew, I have begun a DS9 rewatch. It's been a while since I've rewatched the entire series straight through, which I think I may have mentioned last week here on the show. So visit my website. There's a link up there for DS9 Rewatch, and I'll just be adding each episode as I go along, sharing some of my thoughts on the episode as I refresh my memory on all the details and look for various topics for us to discuss here on The Orb. And on the network, you'll find me, of course, with you on Literary Treks, Matthew, also on The Ready Room, where I'm joined by hosts from all over the network and special guests every week as we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series and Star Trek news. You'll also find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, and on my interview show, Matterstream, where I talk to writers and scientists and actors and creatives and other people about topics that are loosely related to Star Trek. So check all those shows out as well. And also, Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor for this week's show. Your support of our sponsor makes it possible for us to bring The Orb to you. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books that you've always wanted to read, but you never thought you'd have time for, because, you know, let's admit it, we only have so much time in the day to read. But a lot of us have a lot of extra time where we can listen to something while we work. So Audible is a great way to do that. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from right now. They're adding new titles every week. They have current bestsellers. They have classics. Lots of Star Trek books over there as well. And as a Trek Film listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. So go over to audibletrial.com/trekfilm and sign up today. Get your free audiobook. And that helps us bring The Orb to you every week. And we really thank Audible for their support of the network. And there's one more way you can directly help us keep The Orb coming to you each week, and that is by getting some aliens. We have original illustrations of aliens by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We have them as badges and as art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format. We have different levels of contribution for you to choose from as well, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Orb to you every week. You'll find these aliens over at trek.afilm/donate. So go over there, check them out, and we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb. Recording. Chase Masterson's No Pants.
Jules's genetically enhanced pants.
Whoa, you put those two together and that is one saucy person.
Yeah, it makes you think there may have been a little more genetic enhancement going on the station than just Bashir.
Yes, this is definitely the other side of the orb.